Marilyn Morning with Sheila Cast on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. The writer Rafael Alvarez is a former reporter for the Baltimore Sun. These days, you'll still see his byline from time to time in The Sun and many other local publications. He worked for a while on The Wire with his former Sun colleague David Simon, and earlier this year, he published his eighth book. It's a collection of short stories in which he introduces us to the kind of people and neighborhoods that give Baltimore its unshakable reputation for quirkiness. It's called Tales from the Holy Land. I spoke with Rafael Alvarez about it last January. What jumps out of every page of this really terrific collection is that Baltimore has shaped you so much as a writer and as a person. This is all about Baltimore. This is a very local thing, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. I cannot separate myself from the city of Baltimore. And, you know, having grown up here, I mean, I started writing for the city paper when I was 19. I started writing for The Sun when I was 20. That's a long, long time ago. And having been a reporter for a couple decades on Calvert Street, I kind of got paid to study the great subject of what would become the great subject of my work, which is the city of Baltimore. And it's very personal through family history. And it became very clear to me how indelible it was and how this is my life's work when I spent about 5 years writing for network television in Los Angeles from like 05 to 08. And the money was wonderful and the people treated me well, but I just wanted to be home.
Mm-hmm. You're writing for The Wire.
You have written here.
For The Wire. That was here. But then you did some other work in TV and film out in L.A. But the magnet that is Baltimore just drew you back.
Well, I only want to tell Baltimore stories. There's a story called Junibug in this collection. I had read in the paper that after the fall of communism, this middle-aged man in Albania went up to the mountain where all the neighbors disappeared under communist rule with a shovel, and he began digging for the body of his father. And I was very moved by that devotion. It took the man a long time. There were a lot of bodies up there. And I wanted to retell that some way with the devotion that was inherent in that story, but I had to put it through a Baltimore filter. So instead of a mountainside in Albania, it became Leakin Park.
Yeah.
Instead of execution by communism, it was execution by crime.
You know, you start that story. It's a beautiful story. And you start it by touching on a thing that is either a sore spot or a source of pride for a lot of Baltimoreans, in that people know Baltimore through shows like The Wire and through figures like John Waters. You write at the beginning of Junibug, you say, you think you know Baltimore because you own a television, because you can recite Poe. Maybe a distant relative had some rare and awful thing cut out of their brain at Johns Hopkins Hospital and lived to eat the best crab cake of their life before flying home. Who doesn't believe that they're smarter than Pia Zadora? This story is about the other Baltimore, a city that once made nearly every bottle cap in the world, a place where each narrow block has a tavern on one corner and a church at the other, promising that anything was possible in between. And the Pia Zadora references, John Waters was shooting a movie with Miss Zadora, and he had to say to her, look, this isn't a set. People live here.
Yeah, I love that phrase from John.
But the world does know Baltimore from The Wire, and that's unfair, huh?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. I think The Wire did make attempts to show something beyond the gangsters and the appetite for TV entertainment is thus that people only wanted more gangsters. People want to believe what they want to believe, so to speak. And I like to say that, you know, my Baltimore is not John Waters' Baltimore. It's not Barry Levinson's Baltimore. It's not David Simon's Baltimore. It's a little of all three with my own personal history thrown in. And that phrase that John used, people live here, that's what I try to get at in these stories.
The stories are connected. There's a whole series of stories at the end of the book that you sort of give the grand title of the Basilia stories, and it concerns a title named Basilio Bulozzo. He's a fascinating character. Introduce us to him.
He's a not-so-veiled version of myself. It all started, those particular stories started back in 1989 when I moved in with my Spanish grandfather, also Rafael Alvarez. And in the story, and my grandfather's Spanish relatives have the name Bulozzo, and he had a brother named Basilio, so I just flipped it a little bit. And the kid is named for his grandfather, and I wrote a story called The Fountain of Highlandtown, which became the title story of my first collection, which was published by a dear friend of mine, Greg Wilhelm, who, as you know, is behind the City Lit Project, which has been very successful. And I wanted a alter ego that wasn't a writer, so I made him a painter. And in some ways, that painter, Basilio, is doing the same thing with his family's history, which again is a version of my own. You'll see on the cover, it's a photo of tugboats taken by Leo Ryan, pride of the Shrine of the Little Flower, class of 1972. My dad was a tugboat engineer. So the way I am, one story at a time, painting a or writing a mural of 20th century Baltimore, maybe 1920 to 2020, spanning my grandfather's life through my own. Basilio is painting his family's history one panel at a time in what becomes a large mural of a history of the margins of Baltimore City. That's where people live, in the margins. When I was a reporter at The Sun, we all had to rotate through the obit desk when people were on vacation or weekends. And I tried to stay away from, you know, the head of the mercantile. I tried to stay away from, you know, the hotshot philanthropist. I'll never forget, I interviewed this one woman. She had some long Polish name. Her name was Clara, and the headline was Baker of Cakes. She was the neighborhood lady that for whatever occasion, a birth, a death, a confirmation, Clara would bring you a cake. And I interviewed this other woman who said she met her husband down the shore over a 15-cent glass of root beer. Those people live here.
Yeah, and they populate this book through and through, and they're fascinating. Let me ask you to read a little bit about Basilio and one of the settings in this collection, which recurs several times, is a bar that is run by a woman named Bonnie, which is full of Elvis paraphernalia.
Which is a real place. You know, people say, oh, there's Elvis in your stories, and I'm like, not really. Miss Bonnie is in these stories. Miss Bonnie was a real person named Lavonda Hunt. Her bar was just called Bonnie's. It was a corner of Fleet and Port. It's now been transformed into some sort of urban mansion monstrosity. It bears no resemblance to what it was. And Miss Bonnie would let us have fun there, and we called it Miss Bonnie's Elvis Bar. And this is from a story called Wedding Day. Basilio drove east with Roxanne for a rendezvous in the shadow of the king. East into the Holy Land, toward Miss Bonnie's Elvis Grotto. It was almost 11 p.m. when they pulled up to the corner of Fleet and Port. "Where are we?" asked Roxanne, scooting up to a plate glass window where a bust of the king stood in a carpet of poinsettia leaves, lights twinkling around his neck. "We're here," he said, holding the door open. Roxanne stepped inside, her pupils opening wide in a poorly lit sanctuary for people who have nowhere to go on days when everyone is supposed to have some place to go. Three solitary regulars looked up from their drinks to give Basilio and Roxanne the once-over. A wrinkled dwarf in white face, a woman who couldn't hold her head up, and an old foreigner who needed a shave, falling forward on an aluminum walker. A cold-cut buffet was set up against the wall. Behind the bar, goldfish floated in and out of a white mansion sunk into a long aquarium. 45 RPM records sprayed silver and gold hung from the ceiling, and Elvis crooned, "The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." No one spoke until Miss Bonnie, deep in an easy chair at the back of the bar and savoring a voice that came to visit but not to stay, noticed her visitors. "Why, darling," she said, putting down a movie magazine, "I was wondering if my boyfriend was going to remember me on Christmas."
Rafael Alvarez reading from his latest collection of short stories. It's called Tales from the Holy Land. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Johnny Winter plays a big role in this book, too.
Yeah!
Yeah, that's right. So you're a Johnny Winter fan, huh?
I will confess.
And remind folks who Johnny Winter is. For
oh, I know. It's a shame that I have to. It's a shame that I have to. I confess, and the great local writer Deborah Rudisill can certainly attest that I have listened to Johnny Winter every day since the Carter administration. Johnny Winter is the great albino blues man from Beaumont, Texas. His family goes back to Leland, Mississippi. His debut album in 1969, which is just called Johnny Winter, has Willie Dixon on bass and Big Willie Horton on harmonica, his brother Edgar on sax. And I just can't tell you enough about how important he is to me. And people say, oh, Clapton and Stevie Ray. You know, Clapton can't carry Johnny's guitar pick. And I actually said that to Pete Townsend once. I was walking down the street in London in 97, and I bumped into Pete Townsend, of all things, and he was kind enough to chat with me for a couple minutes. And I looked at him and said, you know, you do know that Johnny is greater than Eric. And he just politely ignored the comment.
See, you know, when you talk about Johnny, you talk about Elvis Presley, you talk with such passion, such, you know, visceral affection for this place you call the Holy Land, you know, Baltimore. Is Baltimore really, when you try to look at it sort of objectively and a little dispassionately, is Baltimore all that different than Cleveland or Detroit or
no,
Phoenix
it is not.
Or something?
No, it is not. Well, it is different from Phoenix,
well,
my friend.
Different.
Please.
I suppose the world is different than Phoenix. Yeah.
I could have been born into Detroit or Cleveland had I been born who I am with the aspirations that I have. And I believe I could have been calling books about those cities the Holy Land.
Rafael Alvarez, his latest book is called Tales from the Holy Land. We spoke about it last January. We've got more information about the book. Come to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up Monday morning on Maryland Morning, Sheila talks to the director of the Maryland Access to Justice Commission. Nathan learns about tracking ospreys. And I'll hang out with Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen, a bluegrass band, and they'll perform in our studio. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy 4th of July.
Maryland Morning is an original production of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore.
The program is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. I'm Tom Hall. I'm the culture editor.
We have production help from Brandon Block, Alexandra Kennedy, and Justina Latimer. Coffee provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville on the web at zekescoffee.com.
You can find us online at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. You can leave a comment about something you've heard or make a suggestion about an interview you think you should hear on our show.
On 88.1 WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. The whole Maryland Morning team is glad you're listening. Have a great weekend. I used to be.